33% of our guests have hit me in the face. We need to have more guests. Yeah. Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
And I'm Ryan.
And this is Jackie.
Hey.
And this is the Concept Crucible podcast. And today, we are going to talk about school. Sort of. Jackie, what are we talking about?
We're talking about sex.
Let's talk about sex.
Baby, let's talk about you and me. I was pointing. I'm nervous. Now I'm super self-conscious.
Let's get some copyright... let's get some copyright permission.
It's a cover. It's fine. But yeah, we're talking about sex. Specifically, the sex and health guidelines in the new Ontario school curriculum. Which Jackie has... in front of her.
Geekily printed out the elementary school.
Now, first, I guess, is the street cred. Neither Ryan nor I have children in school. We don't actually have children at all.
That we know of.
I wouldn't... never mind. But we spent a lot of time talking about ethics. And talking about sort of rights and respecting other people. But,
No actual little people.
No, oh God, no. I have nieces, and I love them, and they're in the school system. And I think this will be really good for them. Mm. But how about you?
We have four in our household that are in elementary school. So next year, when this curriculum is implemented, there will be one in grade one, one in grade three, one in grade four, and one in grade six.
So you basically get the whole gamut.
Pretty much, yeah. We're going from genitals to, what are we going to in grade six? I guess orientation, that kind of thing.
Nice.
I think.
And you yourself are studying sex, marriage, and the family?
I am taking sexuality, marriage, and family studies. It's focusing on the sexuality part.
Not the marriage part?
Nah, sex and relationships is kind of my thing.
Fair enough. Anyway, I suppose it's time for our icebreaker, which is, who is your first crush in school? I mean, a lot of the complaints around the sex ed curriculum or the health curriculum have to do with sexualizing or romanticizing children too early, in the sense that they are being introduced to ideas which are foreign to them,
right?
And which they should not ever know about until much, much later in life, when they are completely unprepared for them.
Right. I was completely innocent, obviously, because I didn't have this in school, so none of us
knew
about
it.
Anything.
I eat nothing. Storks. Storks all the way down.
Storks, cabbage patches, and chanting, apparently.
Chanting, yes. But yeah, Ryan, who was your first crush in school?
The first one that I can remember, or the furthest one back that I can remember, is probably grade three. It was a classmate named Barbara. She was my first crush and my first kiss, although it was a peck, so you know, it was scandalous at the time. But still, like, innocent.
Did you get any Pokemon cards for it?
The grade 3, there was, I don't think there was Pokemon at the time. Right. Grade 3 would have been, what are you, 7 at the time? So, I would have been in 92 or 93, which I don't think.
No, you haven't had Pokemon cards yet.
No.
How about you, Jackie?
The first one I can remember, I guess, was grade 2. And the new boy at school, Danny. And, I don't remember how it came about, but somehow we went for a kiss behind a snowbank and got caught by a nun.
Nice. I'm glad you're here.
I just like the snowbank side of it for some reason. It's like, this is very Canadian.
Behind the snowbank, caught by a nun.
Not nice. Under the bleachers.
We need to build a snow fort.
Yeah.
Why? It's important.
I think the snowbank was already there. I don't think there was that much mindfulness. In the
That'd be pretty good, though. Might hit on that in the next podcast. Mine, I think I was in the second grade, and I noted that several of my classmates had crushes. I was like, I should have one of those. That seems like a thing I should have. So we were in an assembly. And there was a girl who was like 2 grades ahead of me. She was in the 4th grade.
Ooh.
And no. I never had any social or physical contact with her.
No, I know. You were just going for the...
Well, I mean, she had really cool hair. And I was like, she has really cool hair. I should be in love with her. Okay. I am. And every time I would see her in the hall or something, I would have that thought of like, oh, there's that girl I'm in love with. Huh. That's it. No, there's no banks. There's no nuns. There's no, romantic initiation by an older woman. There's nothing. That was it. That was like, I was just like, yeah, that's a thing I should do. I don't know why. I just think it's a thing I should do.
I'm spotting a pattern here, though, in terms of, like, when crushes... it'd be interesting, maybe you could comment in the comment section below, like, for older or younger than that. But, like, right around grade two and grade three seems to be a common time where kids start to develop.
Well, I mean, that's when we start interacting with romance in media. I mean, we actually a lot before that now. Like a lot earlier in life than that now, but
well, I think it has something to do with our developmental stage at that point too. Yeah, we're starting to realize that there's more to than just us, right? When kids are still 5, 6 years old, they're still very much just this little world, and they don't really realize that there are other people. I mean, there's people that feed them and stuff,
and it's a different kind of.
It's also you're at that point where things that kids who are older than you or people who are older than you do are cool. I remember having that talk with Gwen, my niece.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, why does my younger sister want to do everything I want to do? Because that is just how younger sisters work. Everything you do is going to be cool to her until it stops being cool.
Yeah. And that's at our house too.
Yeah. And it's that notion that you know that there are older kids who are dating.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's cool.
So you want to be cool.
Yeah. I mean, you don't really understand what that means. You just sort of... It's like Peter Pan. You know, you just sort of move around symbols and artifacts without really understanding them.
I'd beg to differ. I don't remember the emulation side of it, that because other people do it, I wanted to do it. I seem to recall having distinct feelings, like the giddiness feelings and the, ooh, you know, like girlfriend kind of deal. Maybe she's a girl. Mm. So I don't remember it being because mommy and daddy do it or because an older person I see does it that I'm going to emulate it until I feel it. I remember the feelings seemed to come first. It wasn't that I just chose her at random. Cognitively, it was.
I didn't choose mine at random. She had cool hair.
Well, true.
But I don't know if it's a conscious... I see it, so I want to do it. I think it's more that it's just kind of something we're absorbing.
Yeah. No. It just seems like the story you told, Jim, was a lot more deliberate and conscious of what you were doing.
Right. Oh, yeah. It also wasn't really meaningful in any way. I made no special effort to have contact with this person. I had decided that was the thing to do. I was a peculiar child.
That she was non-consensually the object of your desire.
Yeah, but it didn't... sort of. But, I mean, there wasn't really any desire. It was just this huge abstraction.
Mm-hmm.
So that I could check some kind of mental box.
So, since this did all happen around grade 2 and grade 3...
What do you learn in the new curriculum in grade 2 and grade 3?
Right, so one of the things is people are saying we are sexualizing children too young, right? That they can't understand these concepts. It's too much, too soon. They're too young.
I barely understand these concepts now, I'll be honest.
Well, yes, there is that. But in that, like, just our stories, like, we are, not that kids are thinking about it in the terms of sex or sexualization, but we are thinking about it in terms of relationships.
Yeah.
Right? And that's more what the curriculum is talking about in the younger grades. Sex does not enter into it as a thing, like, or sexuality, basically. Well,
I think the first elements, don't they come up in, like, grade 4 with reproduction? Like, not actual, the act.
Right, the actual, like, sex act itself, yes.
It's much later, but yeah, by grade 4, you're already starting to talk about, I think it's grade 4 from what I recall, the actual reproduction of how... Because they talk about with zygotes, gametes, sperma, whatever, spermatoa.
Yeah.
Spermatogenesis.
Sokotoa, that's, for some reason, that's
what it's called. Yeah, spermatogenesis and menstruation are actually in grade 5.
Oh, okay.
So the actual how your body works, which that is actually something I'm disappointed in the new curriculum and the update. I was kind of hoping that would be bumped to grade 4.
You would think you'd want to get a slightly more ahead of the curve.
Yeah, like when we're talking about menstruation, like there's kids that it could...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could be. Yeah, you want to kind of get ahead of the curve.
This is all
like
designed
that.
For mixed class stuff too, right? This
is not necessarily.
No?
Okay. I think they are still doing some same sex teaching.
Yeah, because I remember when we were in school, like it was always separate. Which means guys didn't learn about menstruation except sort of in the abstract.
It was for me.
Right, I'm not sure how they're actually going to handle that one. I think it talks about it a little bit more at the beginning of the curriculum, but I could. I'm not going to.
But yeah, regardless, what do you learn in grade 3, grade 4? Like where?
Well,
what
so grade 1 is actually where it's starting, and all they're doing really in grade 1 is talking about the proper names for body parts. All right, and
that is important to know.
Some people even have a problem with that is sexualizing the children. We're not sexualizing it by simply telling somebody that that's called a penis or a vulva.
Yeah.
We're sexualizing it by not telling them.
Mm. Yeah, right? we are making it taboo.
We're making it taboo, right? Mm. And really, rule 1 for child protection is know your names for your body parts.
Mm-hmm.
Right? For them to feel empowered enough or to even know what they're talking about. And by not talking about it, we are starting that cycle of shame, right? That's my knee, that's my toe, that's my elbow. I don't know what that's called. Nobody wants to talk about that, so it must be bad.
So it isn't a thing that we talk about.
Right. So yeah, grade 1. I don't think most people have an issue with kids being told the names of the genitalia.
I certainly hope not.
I would hope not either. But they're also talking about just, like we're talking about kind of the beginning, the seeds of consent too in grade 1. The actual wording from the curriculum says, demonstrate the ability to recognize caring behavior like listening with respect, being helpful, and exploitative behavior. So inappropriate touching, verbal, physical abuse, bullying, and describe the feelings that are associated. So we're starting to give them language on how to talk about this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. That seems really, so as a person who has been a schoolyard bully,
and I
have been on both ends of that, but I have definitely, as a large person, there were definitely occasions where I took advantage of the fact that I am physically imposing, in order to, I don't know, just do whatever I wanted. And like, not like take people's lunch money, but at the very least take liberties with people and make them feel unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not particularly at all proud of that.
Right.
But it was a thing that younger Jim did because he thought it was a thing that people did.
Mm-hmm.
So the notion that we are starting to train that out of children at an earlier age before I would have recognized it and begun doing it seems kind of great.
Yeah, and I think we've been talking about bullying a lot in schools already for years, right? It doesn't really necessarily seem to have gotten too far in the way we're attacking it yet. I think we will have more luck in empowering the bystanders, right? The people around and being able to really get people to label those as inappropriate behaviors from early on. And like you said, the earlier Jim might not have kind of have recognized those behaviors as something that wasn't great, right? The earlier that it's talked about.
Yeah. I mean, empathy isn't a thing you're born with. Empathy is a thing that you learn. Empathy is a thing that you practice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is neat to think that everybody has it to the same degree. But that, to anyone, I guess, who has interacted with human beings, is sort of patently untrue.
Yeah, and we're talking about that in grade 2 as well. So, like, and we're building on this every year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So explaining the importance of standing up for themselves and demonstrating the ability to apply behaviors that enhance their personal safety in threatening situations. So we're talking about speaking confidently, stating your boundaries, saying no, and respecting the right of a person to say no, and encouraging others to respect that right, and also reporting exploitative behaviors, such as improper touching other bodies or other bodies and stuff like that. So that's even something as simple as, like, me touching you, pulling away, and me trying to touch you again, and saying, oh, it doesn't look like Ryan really likes that very much, Jackie.
And the funny thing is that the way the language is written, it's not, it covers, like, sexual inappropriate touching, but it covers as well the bullying side of it. So they've had the foresight to be like, no, anything from tickling to, you know, just anything that's
aggressive hugging even.
Yeah. Or there's, I think, a College Humor video of, like, somebody who goes over and, like, massages
yes.
the person or whatever at the workplace, and you can just see the actors. Or,
yeah.
You know, so I kudos to them for just, like, let's just throw it all in there in language that is.
And build on it.
Well, and it is all sort of the same thing. I mean, it's all based around respecting other people's right to bodily autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. we're not talking about sexual consent in grade 1 and 2. We're not teaching them how to have sex or how to say yes to sex.
Yeah, that's what they have the internet for.
Yeah. The internet is something.
I just Google it.
All right. And then we get into grade 3, which is where you hear a lot of the hubbub coming up out of grade 3 here. So we are talking about being in, again, a healthy relationship. What's healthy? What's not healthy? Building on that again. Oh, that was a loud page turn. I'm sorry.
Grade three is where things start to get loud. But
Three is one of the bones of contention that a lot of people that are protesting the curriculum have, because we're talking about visible and invisible differences. So visible difference would be skin color, hair color, eye color, maybe physical disabilities, right? Someone's in a wheelchair, not in a wheelchair, those kind of things. Even the type of clothing someone wears or possessions they might have. Somebody has an iPod, somebody can't afford an iPod, has a nice bike, whatever. Those are all visible differences.
Yep.
We're also talking about invisible differences. So we're going to talk about things like learning abilities, skills and talents, personal values, cultural differences, beliefs, gender identity, sexual orientation, family background, personal preferences, allergies, sensitivities. So can you guys guess what people have an issue with in that list of stuff?
Allergies. Do you seriously, you have no idea how many people complain about the notion that their kids can't bring a peanut butter sandwich to school.
That's true.
Like, that is don't bring a peanut butter sandwich to school, other kids could die. No, I actually think it's really, really good and interesting. But it just this is not a point counterpoint kind of thing. We don't think that this is in any way bad. Even Ryan, who's a little quiet over there, isn't like, oh, those bastards. They're just... No.
You know what, honestly, my first thoughts about that is I barely understand that as an adult. This seems awfully ambitious to talk about in grade 3.
Well, the interesting thing, though, the earlier we get to kids and the earlier we talk to kids about this kind of stuff, they have an understanding that we don't.
Yeah.
Right? There are a lot of adults that can't wrap their heads around the gender fluidity.
Yeah. Or just general intersectionality.
Intersectionality, yeah. Or that gender and the sexual orientation don't necessarily go together.
Yeah.
Right? That someone can be a trans man but attracted to men. It's like, well, why didn't you just stay a woman or it's really confusing for people.
Yeah.
And those things are separate, right? Even that is hard for people.
I wonder if this is all, like if this will, hopefully, I hope that this will also be useful in sort of dealing with or helping to deal with, I mean, issues of misogyny in the sense, like one of the things I recall vividly about many, many years of school and several unfortunate years of adulthood, which occasionally continue depending on what bar I'm in, is the worst thing you can compare another man, a young man, to is a girl.
Yes.
And if we can get to kids early enough and be like, no, that's really not on, maybe you should I believe the technical term is shut the fuck up.
Yeah, well, they're already,
or something far more constructive.
Yeah, hopefully. But we're already trying to quash those gender stereotypes in school. Like, my kids are already coming home and saying that they've talked about gender at school. They show a certain haircut, for example, and they talk about whether that's a boy haircut or a girl haircut. And the different debates that the kids say. And there's some of them are like, well, it's a boy haircut. And some of them are saying, well, you know what? It could be either. It could be a girl could have that haircut or a boy. And then my kid is the one that pipes up and says, or it could be both.
Yeah.
So
proud mama moment.
But yeah, they are already talking about those things. Now, gender identity, we are kind of talking about kids who may not feel comfortable in their own bodies, right? So we look at Jazz, for example, which is a big example. She's a big example, a famous example, has her own book out.
Yep.
And we use that actually around our house to talk about trans identity.
Well, yeah, and there's a lot of different narratives that go along with it. I say this knowing that I know a bunch of trans philosophers who don't like the trapped in another body narrative. Like, but there's a lot of, you know, is that notion that it's not that you're trapped in a body. It's just that you are always this way. I mean, you know, it is. I think the thing that is sort of regardless of rationale, people have different gender expressions, and the sooner the kids can start recognizing that, the sooner it's not going to be weird. So my nieces got into the iCarly.
We haven't watched that. Thanks.
So the iCarly is actually, I sort of enjoy it in the sense that it's a weird 21st century sitcom. And I like watching it with them most of the time because I like watching whatever they're watching. But there was a moment in there when one of the characters disguised himself as an old lady to infiltrate a book signing. And, you know, I mean, usual sitcom related
antics. That's the things you want to sneak into, right?
Well, and there's so because he's disguised as an old lady, there's an old man aggressively hitting on him. And he rebuffs him repeatedly and eventually reveals that he is, in fact, a man to this old man.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, that's weird. That's not really on. And then the scene ends with, I'll try and find it on YouTube, but the scene ends with the old man coming back with security and being like, that one there, she's a man woman. And so I got to have this great conversation with my nieces about why you should not ever refer to anyone as a man woman.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them said, well, what if it's a man disguised as a woman? I'm like, well, then, you know what you should do? Absolutely nothing. just don't worry about it. But yeah, I mean, that's iCarly. That's my they're
don't
7
get
10
me started on
it's aimed at them. Like this is their target demographic. They're in the target demographic and they love it, and this is the kind of stuff it's showing them about gender expression. And
it is, it's used as humor, right? Homosexuality, gender differences,
It's humor and tokenism. We're not. That's a whole other podcast.
That's a whole other podcast. Right, children's entertainment.
Oh.
Yes. But yeah. So in grade three, it's not like they're not hauling in, you know, okay, here, boys, let's show the children what sex between
No,
we're not saying, oh, and hey, you're a boy, right? Do you feel like you're a girl or do you feel like you're a boy? We're not.
Fill out the standardized test,
right?
Sorry,
they're framing it in a way that some people are have differences, and differences are okay. So it's basically, don't be an asshole.
Well, and especially, I mean, given that in a class of 30 kids,
statistically,
at least 3 of them are gay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
so basically, what we're doing is we're trying to make kids who do fall into these different descriptions feel welcome.
Yeah,
which is important on its own, and kids who do happen to fit into our social little normal box. Normal.
Are not the default.
Or at least are not going to be like assholes.
I don't even know that we'd want to consider it the default. But
that's what seems deeply problematic.
That's what we're taught is the default.
Yeah,
yeah, that's that's what I mean. It's like heteronormativity or anything like that. You know, like, it's
heteronormativity.
It's not that you're a deviant. It's not that this is the norm or this is the ideal or whatever. It's
I think that, and that is, I've definitely seen a bunch of objection raised to that. Mostly by, I believe the correct term is bigots. Like people who are like, no. Heteronormativity is right.
It's statistically the norm. Her.
Yeah. Which, great, but, I mean, turns out that even if you have a majority, you don't get to oppress people based on it. It turns out. You can check.
That's a nice thing.
If you can find something that says otherwise, please leave it in the comments. Please make sure that it isn't
Might Makes Right
blog posts from Stormfront or just random Nietzsche quotes. Please.
Well,
we get enough of those.
I kind of like Nietzsche, but I'm not a Return of Kings kind of guy.
Yeah, so I mean that's grade three. We're into grade four.
Grade four, we're starting to talk about puberty. So this is a change in the update. Is that started in grade five before? Now we're talking about puberty in grade four. So we're talking about physical changes, body changing, and some emotions that might come up, and social impacts of these changes.
Do we want to speculate the idea that they're moving it earlier because we're finding kids are moving it earlier?
That's exactly what's happening.
Okay.
Yeah. Now I'm surprised that they didn't move the menstruation and spermatogenesis along with it because of that. But they've left those in grade five.
Hmm.
But yeah, like, this is a research-based, evidence-based, fact-based curriculum, right? And this actually, we have the oldest curriculum in Ontario, right, in all of Canada. So this brings us, first of all, in line with other curriculums across the country. And actually now we're cutting edge on the consent and mental health issues as well. So we're actually going a little bit ahead of the curve on stuff. So across the provinces, some provinces bring up a lot of these things earlier, okay, even than our curriculum still does.
Like,
a lot of them we're kind of on par with. And
like ovary mobile over the cradle? You can get those. They're super cool.
I can just picture like a maraca kind of shake the ovaries or the testes.
Don't shake the testes. It's really problematic.
What else are we teaching in grade 4? Oh, personal care. Oh, please. Yes. Getting your kids to shower. I mean, if they can back that up in school, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yes. So they're talking about the importance of the bodily changes when it comes to things like showering.
Here's awesome. Here's a tip for you kids. You're gonna smell.
Yeah.
Technically, you smell already.
Like feet.
It just starts getting a lot worse.
Yeah, so grade 5, we're talking about the reproductive system, like we said. Menstruation and stuff like that. So actually, this might be a good point to bring up a post that there was, that I read, was in the local paper.
Yep, we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah. So it came from the Community Edition. So it was a piece actually by Stacey Jacobs, who does sexual education within the region, and she was talking about a group girl talk, a girl group that she did, so aimed at grade 5s.
Yep.
So she said, a girl did come speak with me privately after the workshop to thank me. She had gotten her period a few months earlier but did not know what it was. She was too scared to ask her parents and had come to the conclusion that she was dying of cancer because all she knew was that she was bleeding out of a body part that she did not have a name for and was not supposed to talk about. The relief I saw in this girl's face when she realized she was not dying is the reason I continue to do what I do. And this is not a lone incident, and it will continue to be the norm without a revitalized sentiment around the importance of sex education at an earlier age.
I cannot actually imagine.
A 10-year-old.
How completely terrifying that would be.
So, and I was talking to my own daughter tonight about that, right? And she's like, we haven't gotten that in school yet. I was like, well, you're in grade 5, so there's still a couple months, so they'll probably talk about that. I said, but can you imagine if we didn't talk about that at home and you started bleeding and you had no idea what, and this girl in this example didn't even know what that body part was, and she jumped to the conclusion in her 10-year-old mind that she was dying and couldn't talk, she was so scared, couldn't talk to her parents about it because they had, by I'm assuming omitting it from conversation, there was so much shame around it that she couldn't even approach her parents. Now I'm assuming anybody who's a parent is going to hope that their kid will come to them with any problems and not come to the conclusion that they're dying of cancer or whatever it is, right? But this is the thing, is if we don't talk about this stuff at home or we don't think they're ready or whatever it is, that they won't feel comfortable coming to us. It doesn't mean these things aren't going to happen. It means they're not going to come to us.
Yeah. And, I mean, a lot of this seems to be designed about creating safe spaces and creating safe relationships so that kids feel like they can.
Right.
It also seems like an interesting indictment on, like, where do you think the idea that this was cancer came from? I could see her watching House.
Yeah, and who knows?
Or any kind of other medical drama.
Stop watching House with 10-year-olds.
But anyway, it's just the idea that her default is something, like, you don't just pick that out of the blue. You have some sort of experience or relation to it. And if she's learning about, or she's deriving conclusions about her body based on, you know, something like that, you know, what other kinds of conclusions or what else would, you know, somebody else teaching information to our kids, like the mass media or whatever, as opposed to an educator in a structured environment adequate resources.
With adequate resources in what is attempting at least to be a safe space that values discourse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in grade 5 we're going to continue the talk about dealing with threatening situations, applying your appropriate living skills, for example, communication skills and like assertiveness, refusal skills. So again, we're building on that foundation because consent is not something you want to all of a sudden throw at them when they're 15 or 16. So we're building on those kind of things.
So far, I haven't actually been keeping an official tally, but we've like maybe brushed against sex once, and we're only now hitting grade 6. Like, I wonder what the actual problem is.
Well, I think part of it is the notion of introducing things like gender fluidity and like introducing I mean, I remember a lot of backlash about introducing notions of gay marriage and homosexuality or bisexuality. Like, forget, we haven't even talked about, you know, bisexuality, mm-hmm. asexuality, pansexuality, right. Demisexuality.
Yeah, like, we still talk about sexuality in the binary.
Yeah.
Right? Even in this case, we're still talking about it as heterosexual. Yeah,
like if you are asexual...
Then, you're still invisible to
you
know, yeah.
If you are bisexual, you are undecided.
Mm-hmm. It's just a stage until you fully come out gay.
Yeah, or don't.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, that's like, a whole other podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, there's a sense in which they, like, this curriculum is still sort of, it has a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't.
Can you imagine if they were trying to throw in bisexuality and asexuality in here, though? Considering all the backlash and uproar that there's already been.
kids are probably ready for it. I mean, kids.
Yes.
It is parents who are sort of clinging to that notion because it isn't the education that we got in school.
Mm-hmm. And grade 5 is actually where we talk about reproduction. Like, so when we talk about the body, the different functions, that's when sex kind of comes into it.
Mm-hmm.
So how these different things your bodies do, how they actually go to the reproductive mm-hmm. end of it. So grade 5 is really where we're introducing sex as a concept.
Or at least reproduction as a concept. I mean, those seem quantitatively different.
Kind of like how it's more, and it's in a scientific way when we're talking about it at school, right? Mm. So the school's not taking away your right or your job as a parent to kind of infuse all this with your own personal values that you hope to pass on to your kids.
I feel like also if your kid's in grade 5 and they don't know where babies come from, then the school will at least teach them.
Mm-hmm.
Like at that point, like, I feel like by grade 5 you have hopefully been told. But if they don't know where babies come from, they should.
I don't remember when I actually.
I don't know. When did your parents give you the talk?
I never got the talk.
I remember getting where do babies come from?
No, we had a book. I learned when I was a kid. We had the talk, and they're like, this is where babies come from. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Because I'd been asking about it. I was curious because I was an only child.
So here's a book.
I'm like, look, some of my friends have siblings. Can I have a sibling? And I was like, no. I'm like, listen, but life is boring. She's like, hear what you're saying. No.
Still no.
not happening. Here's a book.
Now, we do have books at our house. I think books are great, and they're a great supplement to communication.
Maybe we should grab some of those titles and authors and throw some links in the show notes.
Some of our favorites.
Yeah, do you have any off the top of your head? Not to throw you on
the
spot.
We have, there's a series of 3 by Robbie Harris, and it starts off with It's Not the Stork. Which is ages 4 and up.
We were talking about the stork earlier.
It storks all the way down.
That's the title. So that's for ages 4 and up. So we have that one. Then we have It's So Amazing, which is ages 7 and up. And that talks more about the bodies and stuff like that. And the It's Perfectly Normal is the ages 10 and up one, which is great. Like, they have some awesome illustrations, and it's kind of a fun way to do it. And they talk about, like, birth control and stuff in the later books. You have a guy standing there with a baby and going, but I pulled out. Right? So it talks about these different myths and stuff to kids. So those books kind of, they move between bedrooms, right? We find them in different places.
When I had sex on a pullout couch.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
So now, and the thing, too, just to bring up now, is we always talk about it in the terms of the talk.
Yeah.
As if it's something you're going to sit your kid down with and give them all the things.
Listen, kid, let's talk about bases.
We don't have the math talk. Right? And the science talk. And
I feel like the science talk would be great. Son, you've got some strange ideas about causality. Is this about that time I broke that lamp? Because I totally didn't break that lamp. A lightning bolt broke that lamp. Uh-huh. I think it's time for the science talk. Science Dad has a weird voice.
No, see, I see the first one is, son, you think the world... it's full of solid objects. It's full of mostly empty space. I remember the first time that I realized that this is mostly empty space. And I was like, whoa! But it's solid! I don't get it!
That's
That would be the science talk.
The right? science talk.
Blow your mind.
You should have the science
the
talk.
The second one was probably when I realized white light is comprised of red, green, blue. Like the Roy G. Bib. Because I came from the primary colors of blue, yellow, and red.
Yeah. I was waiting for you to get that. I was going to help.
Blue, yellow, and red in the color, like painting and whatnot. But then for light, to get white light, you need red, green, blue. I remember that was just
mind-blowing. The opposite.
Grade 11 physics was amazing.
Grade 11.
The science talk. But you're right. We don't have the history talk. We don't have the literature talk.
No, and sex and sexuality and how we relate to people and all that. These are just things that we talk about. We communicate with on an ongoing basis with our kids. Right? And when we integrate that in our day-to-day, then that's...
I feel like that is part of the inherent difference is you can stop doing math or reading Shakespeare or studying French, which I think we talked about in the pre-show. Like... School tries to make you not do that. School tries to make you want to do those things. This curriculum is trying to teach kids how to safely and respectfully do probably the one thing in school that they will not want to stop doing.
That they will, by and large, most likely all of them at some point do.
Most likely, and at some point in their lives. And likely pursue extensively. I mean,
extra credit. Sorry,
young lady, we're needy.
Grade six.
Yeah, that's good. That was going to a weird place.
Yeah. So again, we're bringing up gender identity, that kind of thing. We're talking about identity factors that affect the development of a person's self-concept. So we're talking about things in the environment. Maybe we'll talk about media at this point, right? Critical eye, those kind of things. Stereotypes, body image, mental health actually comes into play here. So, yeah, we're talking about things that we're seeing and how they affect us and those kind of things, which I think is great to bring those up. So kids are around 11 now at this point, just to have some context.
Yep.
So we're talking about personal skills, interpersonal skills, self-awareness, self-management, anger management, communication, how to avoid, manage conflicts, right? So all those kind of things. Building confidence. We're talking again about the changes that happen in your body. So again, it's not just one talk. We're going to build on these, right? We're also talking about making informed decisions that demonstrate respect for themselves and others and help build healthier relationships. So, and they're talking, the teacher prompts about how does knowing yourself help you make healthy decisions when you're in a relationship. So again, we're bringing values into this.
Mm-hmm.
So those are where somebody might say, in my family, right, whatever, those kind of things. So it helps them make those kind of things, being clear on what you have, what you value. And again, respect for others and showing that you value their differences.
Yeah.
So just because something's my value doesn't mean that it needs to be a universal value.
A lot of this seems to revolve around the notion of things like self-ownership, which is good. I mean, in the sense that that's how you develop autonomy.
Yes. Self-respect, self-responsibility.
Yeah. Like you have to, and part of, you know, having self-possession is realizing that other people also have that. So it develops your empathy, it develops your theory of other minds, and so that you can treat people accordingly.
Yeah, so the building on that in the curriculum, too. So we're talking about stereotypes, including homophobia, assumptions regarding gender roles and expectations. So we're bringing that up again. And it'll be a more robust discussion now at this point because they're 3 years older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Sexual orientation, gender expression, race, ethnicity, culture, mental health, again, abilities, individual self-concept, social inclusion and relationships with others, appropriate ways of responding. All right, so they get into, again, this is a prompt, so this is not actually like a mandatory part of the curriculum, but they're talking about we need to make sure that we don't assume all couples are of the opposite sex, and we show this by words we use, so using the word partner, for example, instead of husband or wife.
Yep.
So a lot of what we talked about in the pre-show was languaging, right? We want to give people the language to be able to discuss.
Well, and have that language used by people who are part of the, you know, sort of, who are part of establishing norms of language. Teachers are much better influencers than parents when it comes to establishing norms of language. I mean, in the sense that teachers all sort of work from the same thing, but teachers also work from a different position of authority. I mean, you know that the teacher's job is to teach you things.
Mm-hmm.
The teacher teaches you, you know, your French teacher teaches you the French word for fish is boisson. You don't go, oh, well, I don't really like that word. Fuck that word. I'm just, what is it? It's a boite. That's a box. It's a fish. Fish box. Box fish. Boisson. Boisson is a bottle, is a drink. Oh. Like you're taking linguistic instruction from teachers already, whether you know it or not. Teachers are using words. They're teaching you words. They're like, so, I mean, getting teachers to put these in use, it sort of normalizes them.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that seems entirely healthy. As opposed to having the heteronormative curriculum, which is all like Bob and Sally. Or, you know, Bob and Sally and their two kids. Who are Bob and Sally?
Well, yeah, a lot of... And
junior.
We talk about that in the earlier grades, too, right? Families are a lot different. There's a lot of different compositions out there.
Yeah.
Some have a mom and dad. Some have two dads. Some have two moms. Some have one mom, one dad. Some might have two moms, two dads. Like, step families, we bring those into.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Grandparents, whatever. Some kids might be even have foster parents or whatever.
I remember when I was a kid, the notion of step families and single parents was the thing that people fought about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can't introduce the notion that there are human beings who have anything less than a healthy nuclear family. Even though most of the kids in our classes came from either had step parents or single parents, or their parent, like, you know,
they're talking about teaching to the ideal
half sisters and stuff like that.
What they saw as the ideal.
Yeah, and they're like, no, nuclear families.
Because that's what we want kids to grow up and
sure,
want
but,
to emulate, right?
I mean, when you're a kid from a single parent family, the reinforced notion that nuclear families are normal,
mm-hmm.
is entirely destructive.
Yes, it and is, everything else is wrong.
Yeah, like you're already broken out of the gate.
It's destructive to the core, right? And that's the same thing when we talk about sexual orientation or gender identity or any of these things that someone feels they don't fall into that image of what they see everywhere in the media. Magazines, TV shows, friends, or whatever. Like, there's a reason why it's important to bring this up in school.
Because
kids who feel like they belong are going to be, well, first of all, better at school, and they're going to be much
healthier people
and contribute to society in a positive way, hopefully.
Yeah.
So yeah, if we want to keep going here in the curriculum, we've got grade 7, which is another big
sticking point
here, because now in the curriculum here we talk about explain the importance of having a shared understanding with a partner about the following: delaying sexual activity. So they do talk about delaying it. It's not really a choice at this point. They're talking about delaying sexual activity.
Yeah.
For example, choosing to abstain from any genital contact, choosing to abstain from having vaginal or anal intercourse, choosing to abstain from having oral genital contact, the reasons for not engaging in sexual activity, the concept of consent, how consent is communicated, and in general, the need to communicate clearly with each other, making decisions about sexual activity in the relationship.
Yeah.
So what I see here is very much an abstinence-focused curriculum.
See, I don't see that. I actually see, instead, the idea of it's a way of positively combating against pressure.
Yeah.
That
it's okay to still delay it.
Yeah, it's okay for you to not have to engage in it in any form. Because it's pretty enumerative there.
Right.
Like, it's not just, you know,
like at
vaginal
this point,
intercourse. It goes, like, all the way from oral.
Yes, there. And that's where people are like, but they're being taught about oral and anal sex in school and at grade 7 to boot, right?
Spoilers, they know about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can, when you can tell, when you're in grade 7, you can tell jokes about doing it in the butt.
The problem with not introducing it at this point is that, again, this is a research-based, evidence-based, fact-based curriculum. Kids are looking at oral and anal sex as viable and more attractive alternatives to vaginal intercourse. First of all, they think it's safe because they're not going to get pregnant. And they're looking at it as a way to still hold on to that virginity.
Yep.
So it's even the younger kids, right, that may be thinking of these as the alternatives. and we need to get to them before they're doing this. And again, then we're not really shocking them and introducing something they have not heard of before.
One of the other things is we're keeping them from and sort of helping them develop skills so that if they are pressured by older kids who are more worldly, that they have the ability, you know, the sort of self-awareness and self-possession to decline and you know, understand that that is permissible.
And what the risks are associated with it, because we get into STIs and different things like that. And we're building on the stuff that we've talked about before about autonomy and respect for yourself.
My God, it's like this is a comprehensive plan or something. Yeah, because one of the other things is identifying sexually transmitted infections and ways of preventing STIs, including HIV and or unintended pregnancy. Which, I mean, if you were in the seventh grade and you have an intended pregnancy, something has gone awry. You have made a poor decision. I'm just going to go out and...
Not that I haven't seen that on Maury Povich or Jerry
Sprayano. No, I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm saying that I remember seventh grade gym. That was... almost exactly 20 years ago. And he was a fucking idiot. He did a lot of things that were really stupid.
I misunderstood. I thought you were talking about grade 12 gym class. And I'm like, Jim was a fucking... Your teacher was a fucking...
No.
I think we both did the same thing. Like, oh, young Jim.
And in the seventh grade...
20 years younger
like,
Jim.
Had I made a decision that would affect the rest of my life... I would almost guarantee that decision would be deeply unfortunate.
Yeah, 12 years old, making decisions. And when you're bringing up having sex at 12, this is another important point, is kids as young as 12 can consent to sex.
Legally, yeah.
Legally in Canada. And this is another point I keep hearing, and it's factually wrong. And I hear it from people who are supposed to be experts on it, or the people that are kind of
we've got a link in the show notes.
Looking at the law, it says the age of consent in Canada is 16 years old. And that's kind of where people stop. And they go, it's 16, so why are we talking about having sex when they're 12 and they can't even consent?
Because that's the adults. That's the only thing we care about.
Yeah. So there are the exceptions. Close in age exceptions. So when kids are 12 or 13, there is a 2-year exception. So a 14-year-old can have sex with a 12-year-old. A 15-year-old can have sex with a 13-year-old. When they are 14 and 15, there is a 5-year age exception. So that means a 20-year-old can have sex with a 15-year-old.
And it is legal, provided that both parties consent.
Consenting, yes. Yeah. We're still talking about consensual sex. And we're not talking about power issues, right? So authority, those kind of things. Like if you had a soccer coach who was 20 and 15-year-olds on the team, like those are different situations. We're talking about two consenting kids here.
Without any other entanglements.
Right. So there is that 5-year exception. Once kids are 16, yes, they can consent to sex with anybody, basically. Again, without the other entanglements. Except anal sex, which is still on the books as being age 18.
You gotta save something for later.
So that's kind of an archaic law that's still on the books there.
Well, we need the butt police for that.
Of course. Grade 7, we're also talking about physical, emotional, social, psychological factors regarding sex. We actually talk about sex and desire a little bit. That, oh my goodness.
Wait,
might be having sex when you're a teenager.
Clear this up for me. Sometimes.
Sometimes, yes.
People make sex because they want to.
Sometimes. Yes. So this is actually something that we're talking about in school. Yeah, I would hazard a guess that by and large the people that are having sex when they're teenagers are not doing it for procreative reasons.
But that's the only time you wait until you're married, and
man, woman, yes,
and then you.
Yeah, dude. What if you're a lesbian?
Then
you can still wait until you're married because it's Canada.
You procreate. That's how it works.
Yeah, and there is...
And sarcasm.
There is that argument. Some people, that is their family value, right? That you wait until marriage, and sex is within the confines of marriage, and it is for procreation only. So anything outside of that is, to them, immoral. that is a family value that they can still impart on their children.
Nothing here seems to go against that. It just simply empowers children to make their own choices.
Mm-hmm.
So they can choose to go along with that, which presumably if you're parents and you and that's a really important thing to you, and you talk to your kids and be like, this is really important to us that you do this.
And I don't think these are mutually exclusive things. No. I think you can talk to a 12-year-old about the fact that you may feel sexual desire. Because, spoiler, they're probably going to.
Yeah.
Right? And you can have those talks at home. Then even if you do feel sexual desire, doesn't mean you need to act on those desires or those feelings. So by bringing up desire in the context of sex, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Well, there is one thing that's been at least noticeably absent in... what you've listed off, you might have missed it or whatever, but I haven't actually heard any kind of discussion on masturbation.
Oh.
Would that come under the desire
side
of it?
I believe.
Sorry, I don't mean to backtrack. I just happened to notice. I think it came up a little bit in the pre-show, but...
It did. It's in either grade 6 or 5. I have to...
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to put you on
the
spot.
No. I know it's in here.
It seems like if you're talking about sexual desire,
but yeah. it comes in pretty early in terms of
It does. And if this was electronic, I could just search for the word. But
Control F.
But
yes, it is in the curriculum. And off the top of my head, right now, I'm a bad sex educator. I'm trying to remember exactly where that is. That it is mentioned.
No worries.
Here,
we will have both the full curriculum and the Coles Notes articles from the news linked in the show notes. So
but
you
yes,
can check it out for yourself.
It is around this area.
Yeah, but it comes in around grade 5.
Sorry, it's right in front of me. It was on the page I was on.
Oh, it's also in grade 7.
So it's in grade 7. The effect of physical maturation. Sorry, that's maturation, not masturbation.
You just huckle me. That's what I do. I read some of a word or some of a sentence, and then I just assume I know
it
the rest of
ma it. It and Asian at the end.
Clearly, we're just all about the mastication here. We should probably wrap up, though. I think the core of this is that there is ostensibly, here in Ontario, another side to this that is protesting the curriculum.
Very loud minority, yes.
On the basis of... introducing concepts that they don't want want children to have, trying to either, state endorse values, which, I mean, the state is endorsing values. It's endorsing values of respect and consent and self-confidence. And these are things that hopefully we want kids to have.
Well, like you said, the school is also already teaching values like sharing.
Yeah.
Right? And respect.
Not beating each other up. Not cheating is a really important one in school.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, they already talk about consent as early as kindergarten, right? It's like, oh, I don't think he wanted you to take that toy, right? Or he doesn't look like he wants you to touch him, or did you ask to do that? Or so we're already building on those already. We're just putting it in.
Yeah, we're like we can talk about this, and this is an area of your life where consent doesn't just matter, but where consent is vitally important.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where... A lack of consent or a misunderstanding of consent can not just affect your life forever, but someone else's. And like there is really no other side to this.
No, we kind of all.
I mean, in the same way that there's no other side to vaccination, there's no other side to climate change. There are people who are upset about it, but that doesn't make it not true. I mean, it seems trivial to say these are values that human beings should have, and that we, as adults, I mean, and especially as parents or educators, have an obligation to attempt to do our best to instill them in people, not just in children, but in each other. That's nodding. For those of you who are listening, they're nodding.
Yeah. I said, at least I made a vocalization.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the people who are so vehemently opposed to this curriculum, a lot of people I'm finding have not actually read it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They have read an opinion piece that's based on something out of context, and then have just read that and taken something from that and then based it on that instead of actually looking at the curriculum and the context in the curriculum.
Our listeners will be able to read the curriculum.
Yeah, and it seems big. It's 244 pages, but when you actually go through, it's broken down fairly nicely. You
the can sexy, find the parts. The sexy bits are relatively small. A lot of it has to do with, like, stretching and physical body movement and
nutrition.
And, yeah, nutrition and, like, mastery of your environment and things like that. Balance and the value of yoga.
It is kind of
thick.
But yes, it is the whole health and physical education curriculum for grades 1 through 8 here. So
I do have a question for you as the expert on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that this is comprehensive enough? Do you think that they perhaps missed anything or anything that should be worked on? Because obviously they're going to put it into play, and then a couple of years down the line, we're going to have a chance to see what kind of effects it's having,
right,
and have a chance to tweak it later on. But
right, so our current curriculum is from 1998.
Mm-hmm.
This curriculum is actually a slight revision on what was going to be released in 2010. And there was a very vocal minority outcrying, and McGinty got scared and pulled it back. So this is actually even already kind of 5 years outdated. They have added more of the consent and that kind of thing in here. So it is a little bit revised, which is good. So like I said, I would have liked to see the menstruation, that type of thing, a year earlier. I would like to see, like you mentioned, Jim, a little more inclusivity, not so much binary.
Yeah.
It depends on how it's going to be taught, too. Mm-hmm. Like, we may not necessarily talk about sexual orientation in a binary and gender in a binary, which will be good. I would like to see a little bit more of that specifically mentioned, right? Bisexuality, those kind of things in there. But I think it's pretty comprehensive. Like, sex really hasn't changed that much. Like, it's a fairly similar thing to what it was when
we
were
that.
Younger.
I've read it.
Kind of thing.
I've seen woodcuts.
But yeah, we do learn and we implement it. So I would like to see hopefully another update in 5 years, mm-hmm, looking at how this is kind of played out and rolled out.
Yeah, I wonder how the teaching of it is going to go. I guess I think the most important thing about it, I mean, in terms of helping children find their identities, is so I was we had a little political debacle here in KW not that long ago, maybe I don't know, 6-8 months, the rainbow flag,
the flag.
And there were a lot of arguments about why we ought not to fly the flag, and one of the ones that came up most often from certain municipal representatives was, we have a flag, we have the Canadian flag, and it stands for everybody. But, I mean, gay marriage has only been legal for, what, 10 years?
10 years now, yeah.
There are segments of our population that couldn't vote 50 years ago.
Yeah, we're not that far removed
from
all of this.
So, 10 years ago, the flag did not stand for gay people. It did not acknowledge their rights. What we are doing by codifying this and making sure that these things are taught, and that we try and get children to recognize this, is not just teach children not to be jerks to children and people who are different, but to recognize that people who experience those differences are represented and are welcome and part of our province and ostensibly our country.
Right, because the invisibility of it is really a huge problem. It's not even just acceptance or tolerance or whatever word you want to call it. It's being able to see yourself,
mm-hmm,
in the teachings or in books or movies or whatever
being able to see yourself
is a big shame right there. What's the natural conclusion? You're wrong, mm-hmm, right? There's something inherently broken about you.
Yeah. I think we're going to wrap up there. We're way over time, but it was worth it. Leave your comments below. Say hi to Jackie. Random Nietzsche quotes are, of course, welcome. You can comment here on YouTube, or if you're terrified of YouTube comments, which does not seem unreasonable, you can also go to the Concert Crucible site and comment there. We have a much safer space. Well, then YouTube.
Yes, it's not a safe space.
And we'll definitely have to get Jackie back to discuss grade 8, because we definitely
we didn't get to grade
8.
We totally skipped
Well, there's
skipped
the whole secondary
eight.
Curriculum as well.
There's a whole secondary curriculum. It'll all be in the show notes. Anyway,
hopefully
thank you very
sometime
much.
In the future, we'll get you back.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
Jackie.
And we're signing off.
Stay informed.
When we had Andrew on, he hit me in the face.
Yeah.
There was this moment where we went for like a triple high five, and he was like,
"Felt like I should go for."
What I'm saying is, you're basically our best podcast guest.
But I haven't slapped your face.
You haven't hit me in the face.